It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 11th of April, 2015. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 11th of April, David Basham spoke to Rhiannon from Waiheke Community Library and he spoke to Dougal and Richard from the Waiheke Comedy Club.
Well, we've got our first guest in the studio, Rhiannon from the library, so I think we'll just get started. Good morning, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. So, I saw in the Gulf News lots of things for kids in the library for the school holidays.
That's right, yeah, we had a very successful carnival event yesterday, with about 100 people turning up at the library for that, and we had lots of fun and games out in the courtyard and in the library.
Right, and I see it's on again tomorrow?
Did
I get that wrong?
No, we have got an event tomorrow, but it's a different event. We've got stop-motion animation workshops. Those had to be booked for, and unfortunately those are now full.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, yeah, it's really good from our point of view. we've got full numbers for that workshop and for another stop-motion animation workshop that we're running on the 19th of April.
The following Sunday,
that's right.
So what's the stop motion circus extravaganza?
Yes.
Animation workshops. What are they?
Well, stop motion is where you take a lot of still shots and then you run them together and play them as a movie. So it's a sort of technology that's used on movies like Wallace and Gromit and all of those kind of things.
Right.
I think The Box Trolls was one of the more recent movies that came out that used it. And so it's lots of fun. It's the kids get to create clay animation or use various different props and to create a little movie.
Oh, so and this is on tomorrow from 3 till 5:30. Is that
not 3 to 5:30. No, that's a different one. The one that we've got on Thursday runs from 3 to 5:30.
Oh, because it's all a bit...
Yeah, it's all a bit mixed in there.
Yeah. I'll leave you...
Yeah.
I'll stop reading it from where I'm reading it from and you can tell us. So
sure.
What time tomorrow?
As I said, the stop motion animation workshops are full, so I don't want to sort of advertise them
over the radio as if
people can turn up. But, they're going to be lots of fun. We had those advertised a couple of weeks in advance of the holidays and they got booked up pretty fast.
And the 19th one's booked as well?
Yes. Yeah, they're both booked up.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's great.
I mean, it's great
something
in
that
one
want
sense,
to do.
Isn't it?
Mm, absolutely. And with the popularity that they're showing, it's something that we will continue to offer because
it's obviously
in demand.
So what's on next week for kids?
Next week we have our tween event, which is sort of for 10-year-olds and up. That's also a booked event and that is now full.
Oh my God.
I know.
It's amazing. You'd sort of think, oh, they're just doing these things and kids would go, can I get Wi-Fi?
No. They're all very, very much into it. People are looking forward to what we're doing for the tweens is a murder mystery masquerade. So I don't know if you've ever been involved in one of those host a murder parties. Have you ever been to one of those?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So we're doing something similar to that for the kids.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we've created a video of the sudden and untimely demise of one of the librarians.
Oh, no.
And all the participants in the event will be suspects in the crime and will be using the iPads
and they've got to solve it all.
To solve it, yeah.
Oh, that's fun. I like solving those kind of things.
Yeah, so that's going to be heaps of fun. We have 20 participants in that and it is at this point fully booked. And we have a bit of a waiting list as well if there's any cancellations.
I actually might change microphones over here because we're trying to look at each other and we're not succeeding very well, are we? That's better. That's better. We can look at each other and it does
all
seem
right
to be a little bit easier to talk.
Yeah.
So I've got you on that microphone.
Yep. Hi.
Yep, I have.
Oh, good.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we were just blocked out by little cranes. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. So that's for kids. So what time? That's for over 10-year-olds.
Yes, yes. And right. That's 10-year-olds and up. Yeah. So that's on next Thursday from 3 to 5:30.
Oh, excellent. And you organise all of those? You run
them? Yeah, Lisa and I work together, and Crystal and Al were also involved in the carnival event yesterday, and one of our volunteers too, Susan, took part in that. She had heaps of fun as well.
Right.
So the topic that I thought we could talk about today was Reader's Advisory, which is a library jargon term. And it's something that I'm actually researching at the moment for my research project. But I wanted to talk about it today because I think a lot of our customers don't realize it's a service we offer. People often come into the library, they're looking for something to read, they don't know what they want, and they start browsing the shelves, and they feel like it's their job to do that. Mm. And that if they ask us, it's interrupting us or being a nuisance. And I'm coming on radio today to say, actually, Reader's Advisory, or helping people find a good book, something that they'll enjoy reading, is a really big part of what librarians are there to do.
Well, you know my saying, don't you? If you want to see a librarian smile, ask them a question.
I know.
I mean, that's what you've done all this training for all these years. And that's what you're there for.
Yeah.
I mean, stacking the shelves is just
a side effect. It's a side effect, yeah. So basically, we are actually trained, as you say, and we are there to help people connect with books that are going to entertain them or inform them or whatever it is. So quite often, people who are looking for fiction don't think to ask us, but we really, really do want to help people find books that they're going to enjoy reading. And it's a process of having a conversation, understanding the person, as well as and matching that up with our knowledge of the collection. Mm. So there's a lot of work that we can do to actually help people find books that they're really, really going to connect with. And that's all people. So my research at the moment is looking at Reader's Advisory for children, particularly children aged 10 to 14, because that's the age range where parents suddenly find that kids are wanting to find their own books but don't necessarily know how to do it. So that's where I'm researching. But we do this kind of service for right from the word go, you know, helping parents understand what kind of books they can read to their babies, all the way up to adults, right through helping people find books that are going to mean something to them or help them or entertain them or whatever it is they might be looking for on the day. And it's the thing that I find really fascinating about Reader's Advisory is, you know, the kind of book that somebody will come in looking for on one day could be very, very different from something they're looking for a month later or a week later even. You know, sometimes people are wanting light reads. Sometimes they're just wanting something that they can take with them if they're going on holiday. They might be looking for something that they really want to get their teeth into, like they're wanting to really understand something or they're wanting to learn about something. Quite a lot of fiction books are amazing, like the one that we just read for my book club, The Garden of Evening Mists. A lot of the members of the club enjoyed it. But one of the things that was fascinating about it was that it was teaching us about this period in history that we knew nothing about, and it was about the war between Japan and China that happened before the last World War, and also you know, a state of emergency that happened in Malaysia after World War II. So it was a fascinating book to read from that point of view, a period in history and a place in history that we actually hadn't been taught about. None of us had any, you know, and we had quite an age range represented in the club, and none of us knew about this. So you can read fiction to learn, but you can also read it just because you want a light read and you want to have a bit of escapism and take yourself out of yourself for a bit. So we're there to help you find all of those different kinds of readings.
I can remember, it might have been a year ago now, I was reading political fiction about politics, of course, and I can't remember who it was now. Oh, it was probably Di. But I said, oh, look, do you know of any? Did she know of any?
Yeah, exactly.
The time she'd finished, I had this list.
Yes.
And it was marvellous, you know, because I just didn't know where. Because you can go to the same author all the time, but sometimes you think, oh, I don't really want to read another one of
these. Yeah, you might want a different style, or you might have read everything that author's written, and now you're looking for
and
someone
And I ended
new.
Up reading C.P. Snow's Corridors of Power.
Ah.
And, you know, that's quite a long time ago.
Yes.
And I adored that book.
That's great.
I absolutely adored it.
Yes. And that is often the way that with Reader's Advisory, we tend to prefer to give people three or four options on the day or a list, as you say, because it all comes down to your choice. Mm. So we can make suggestions, but we like to give you more suggestions than just one, so that you have choice within that and you can be more likely to find something you're really going to connect with.
And if I go to the library and get something for myself, it's more than likely either from that new one,
mm-hmm.
because I realise why I do it, because it's easy.
Yes.
I can just look at it.
Actually, a lot of people use the returns trolley that way.
Yes,
as well.
I look along those and see, because they're a little easier and they're random.
Yes.
But often if I get a book off the shelf, it's somebody I've read before.
Yes.
And it's nice to – sometimes it's nice to have something different.
Yes, and that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because, you know, when you go into a library, you're wanting a lot of choice, but actually the amount of choice can be overwhelming. And you don't know where to start. And that's where we come in, because we can help you get inroads into that collection and start targeting areas that you might be interested in.
Right. Well, I'd like to play a track. I've promised somebody I sort of promised them I'd do this, so I better do it. This is Kentish Town Waltz, and Brendan at the Coffee Cart, I often think of Brendan and his wife Juliet when I hear this song. So this is for you guys. Well, there we are. Not quite sure what's happening there. Going to have a look. So, we will just, talk amongst yourselves. I'm just not sure. Well, everything seems to be right. And everything's playing. I seem to have everything plugged in. I don't know what the answer is to that one. So maybe we just move on while I... not always easy to know. Well, you're back on air again. It's not always easy to know what's not quite right, because you can't sort of stop everything and say, okay, well, let's just stop. But nothing seemed to be playing, which was... I just don't know. Anyway, so... have you read anything? Oh, you're busy with your study, aren't you?
I am. Yes, you were talking about an interesting book just now.
Yeah, well, I said I'd have it read by today, but I haven't. It's called The Queen, Her Lover, and the Most Notorious Spy in History. And that person, of course, his name was Blunt, and that was, his Christian names have got Anthony Blunt. And he turned out, I mean, when they discovered him as a spy, he was one of those Cambridge mob that got, but he seemed to not get caught or run away.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up being something for the Queen, like...
And when you say the Queen, talking about Queen...
No, we're talking about Elizabeth.
Oh, Elizabeth.
He ended up being something for the Queen in some kind of archives thing.
Oh,
so he
okay.
was quite... You know, it was quite important when he got uncovered. Nothing happened to him.
Mm.
It was all past.
Mm.
But he's suddenly involved. And this is written by a guy called Ronald Perry. And I'll just say just a few things here on the back. Long before her famously successful marriage to Prince Albert, Princess Victoria had a passionate affair with a dashing Scotchman. It's rumoured that she had a child, and... he's done all the research or keeping the secrets. He's written stacks of books, but I honestly say I'm looking here. He's got pages and pages of them.
Wow.
So I haven't he's written a lot of nonfiction about spies. You know my interest. I think I'd have been a good spy. And so I haven't got it read yet. so I will get through it. It's a surprisingly true story.
Right.
I mean, I've researched that it is true.
Oh, okay.
It did all happen. It's
right.
no,
it's
they're not,
just
not
a
making
rumor.
It making it up, and it's just incredible that all of these things happen. And Blunt became one of history's most successful double agents, and he went and got the letters that Victoria had written to this lover who was sent overseas.
Right.
And he microfilmed them first and passed them on to the KGB.
Ah.
And then gave them to the palace.
Right.
But the KGB got them because this guy, Ronald Perry, he interviewed some KGB people, and that's how he found out about Blunt. So it was all out. So it's quite a lot of things, and you go, oh, not really.
Yeah.
But
you've
appears
done a bit
that
of research.
Queen Victoria was quite renowned for her interests in men.
Because
she went on to have a couple more liaisons with a few. And then, of course, there was the Scottishman again, who was like her partner.
It's interesting considering the Victorian period is notorious for its family values and...
Well, my mother was born in 1901 and she said, son, it went on, you just didn't talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
She said, there's nothing new. She said, I can tell you things that went on in my time that really we just didn't talk about it like we do now.
Yeah.
And there wasn't the publicity. I mean, the Queen was just a total remote character. I mean, particularly after her husband died, but before that, no one knew who the Queen was really. I mean, there was quite a few generations after that they started appearing in public.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it wasn't a very common thing. They were badly educated. They were kept really, you know, over, way out of the, because there wasn't anything to do. I mean, there wasn't TV. I mean, when was it? The Queen's coronation, 1952? I think it was. That's when we opened up the post office in Onirua, which is now the Citizens Advice Bureau. It used to be the library.
Yes, yes, it did.
Yes, that's right. There wouldn't be enough room today, would there?
No.
Mind you, wonder how you got on in the old library.
Well, exactly.
So, you know, there was TV was that broadcast the coronation. So
yeah, and it
there
really shrank the world.
There's no way today that you would have got away with all of this. It just wouldn't have happened.
Not without people knowing.
No. But I've seen some of some documentaries about the Queen and the generations after that, and they were very remote. I mean, and they really didn't. And I can't remember who the first one I can see her. She was a very regal woman, used to wear lace right up to her neck. Queen Mary, I think. I think it was Queen Mary and her husband, whoever that was, probably a George. They were the ones who got out.
Right.
And suddenly appeared in public, and the public suddenly discovered, oh, royal family. So that was it. And even when our current Queen's father, when they were not well educated, they weren't expected to be a public figure.
No,
it's very different
these days.
Yeah.
And,
of course, they were German.
Yes.
Well, there was the name change, so that didn't go down very well. But I think at once, Queen Victoria sort of, you know, has got a line about every royal family in the world at one stage. She was it. But she was very young when she took to the throne. But I think she was a fairly tough sort of person. Anyway, so what else is happening at the library, seeing I'm going to be concerned about music? Anything else been happening?
There's a family history group that's being launched this weekend. So Julia is organising that, and she's got a core group who attended the workshop with Shauna last year, who are going to be coming along and continuing their family history research together, which is really exciting.
When is this?
That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow? What time?
Well, again, if you're interested in that, get in touch with Julia and have a chat with her, because at the moment it is a small group.
No, it's just that I've got research to do,
and
I've done a lot of it, but I haven't. I sort of promise myself I'll do it.
Yes.
And then I don't get it done. But it might be quite good
if
I could sort of match up with some people. And because I've got a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Like my great, I don't know how many greats she is. Quite a few greats. She was born in 1828.
Right.
And she died in 1929.
Right.
I think, or 28. So I think she lived to be over 100 just, and that was rare. So there's a lot of things in the library about her, but I've exhausted that.
Yes.
And I was going along quite nicely, and I've got a lot of information.
Yes.
I just found it very quickly.
Yes.
And I discovered she had 3 or 4 sisters.
Right.
Nobody has ever known that. Okay. I know that for a fact because I would have been told.
Yes.
But you see, nobody talked about the woman they called Nana Watson. No one talked about her.
Right.
So my mother knew her, but they didn't.
It's very.
They didn't talk. She didn't tell me about it. Yeah. I didn't know to ask. I was just given a newspaper clipping.
Yeah.
But I've tracked them all around the world and all her marriage and everything.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of time.
It's very easy to lose that information in families. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, if people, you know, it's like I remember my dad when my grandmother was in her 80s. And she lived to 104, so she went for a long, long time.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, but when she was in her 80s, my dad started actually collecting her stories. So he would go, you know, because he'd go and visit her on a regular basis, but he'd started going and visiting her and asking her to tell her stories, and he wrote them down. So we've got those, and so she worked in a parachute factory during World War One. So we've got a story about that. And all sorts of other things that we would have lost when she died if he hadn't done that.
Wow, that's, yeah. You see, I suppose because people knew her.
Yeah.
They didn't. I mean, her funeral was at St. Matthew's up in Hobson Street. Now, it was, I don't know how big the church was then, but it was full.
Mm.
And one of the chiefs of the Auckland Hospital Board attended.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I tried to find out some information, and all anyone can tell me is, well, probably because she was a very old lady, that's what they did in those days, because it was 1928.
Mm.
The population was pretty small.
It's amazing, though, you know, when somebody does live for that long, just how many things they've been involved in that you don't know anything about.
Oh, the articles that are in the library, they were stunning. As soon as I asked, they came out with, and then one lady came out to me, and someone lady came out to me, a librarian, and she said, "Prepare to cry."
Oh, I remember you telling me about that. Yeah,
and she gave me a. I mean, it isn't a very good photograph, but it was a one's ever seen a photograph of her in the family that's alive now. Mm. Never seen a photograph. Mm. My mother didn't even know it existed. Mm. Wouldn't have known.
Yeah,
I'd love my mother to have been alive because to see these things because my mother didn't know that was done. And it was in modern day.
Yes.
It's actually in a school notebook pasted in.
Yes.
It's also on microfiche.
Right.
But it's in it. This is what and they've kept them.
Yeah.
And they've got
little cards
and it's on a piece. It's on a, in a notebook. I wasn't able to touch it, but she brought it to me.
Just showed you.
And I was surprised that she did that because it's pretty precious. But, and she was right.
Yeah.
I just went, oh. But they were lovely that day I went
They're
in there.
They're brilliant, the librarians in the research centre. Oh, they do so much good work helping people find family connections.
And they're there to do it.
Mm, absolutely.
I mean, they're not there for you to do it. They're there for...
To help
and
you.
And also they've got two or three, maybe two, funeral directors have donated their records.
Wow.
And they're on cards. And you can... I found out where my great Nana Watson's... funeral account went to.
Yes.
And I've been able to track them down.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I've got all these other people that don't even know I'm doing it and they live in Hamilton. So it's and he was a miner, but I can't find any record of him in the mines in Hamilton. But I'll get there.
It's a fascinating process. Mm. Yeah. So have a chat with Julia.
Yeah, I will. I know Julia.
Yes.
And I find the librarians get get excited about it.
Oh, totally.
Because it's finding things.
Yes,
and you track it down. And I think the librarian patted me on the shoulder and said, David, you've just done so well so quickly. You think it'll keep going, but it won't. And she was right.
Yeah, no,
you know, I found all this information really fast because of her.
Yes.
But then the next lot of information, it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah, so it can be very helpful doing it with a group.
But that's how it is.
Yeah.
And there's one thing. No matter how hard I've tried, I am utterly convinced that in one of the library sites, I saw that Nana Watson's husband built the first house in a particular part of Auckland. Mm. But do you think I can find that again?
Mm.
I have searched it. I've even gone to the library there. They were wonderful. I rang them up. They sent me things, all they could find. They were amazing. Mm. They just sent it to me.
Yep.
And I got this information. But either I've imagined it, but I can't see how I could make all that up.
Mm.
And I'm sure it's in there somewhere,
but
one day I might find it.
Yes.
So that's tomorrow. So if anybody want to know, is Julia working today?
Not today,
all
but
right.
she give her a call in the morning.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
that's
good to know because I think it does, you feel better with, and people know stuff that you don't know.
Yes.
Because a lot of people say, just go onto one of the sites on you know, one of the Ancestry or whatever it's called.
Mm.
But this woman was born in 1828. You know, it's not like I'm dealing. They don't have much at that time. It's hard to find.
Yeah, I've gone back on Ancestry.com. I've gone back to the 1700s.
Yeah, it's only if your family's put in there.
Yeah, and the other thing that gets really complicated is that they did a lot of lying about their ages back in that time, especially sort of men when they were looking for work, and women if they weren't married yet. It was nothing to them to shave 10 years off. And, of course, because records were so sparse and it didn't follow you like it does today. It's not like you had driver's licenses or things like that. It was so easy for them to do it.
Yeah.
And so you're tracing this person and they move counties and you're like, you're sure that's the same person, but they're supposedly 10 years younger.
Well, I'm very lucky that up to us from my grandfather, my father's father, who was born in England, but came to New Zealand. I don't know much about him, but I look just like him. I've got a photograph of him.
Oh, cool.
You'd swear it was me as a sort of an old-fashioned person. Now, that side of the family has all been done.
Right. Yeah, it's great when you've got somebody's done
but it. But I've only done this Nana Watson because she fascinates me. Because her life, she came from England to New Zealand, saw Honey Heke, was involved in Russell, came to Auckland. Her stepfather leased what's now the Debretts. Then they went to San Francisco. She married in Hawaii, made a guy called David Watson.
Wow.
They had children in San Francisco and came back and then lived a life out here. But she outlived everybody, including her children.
I know, that's
so
hard.
No one ever talks about them because she didn't. And, of course, every time they interview her, I go, Nana Watson, you're not making sense because her memory had.
Yes.
You know. But there was one journalist insisted she was a fluent Maori speaker.
Wow.
And they quote Maori in the article. Now, if they didn't do that, I don't know if she was or not. But there's all sorts of amazing stuff. But so I'm not really interested in what happened in England other than I'd like to know. She was born in Shoreditch. I know all of that, but don't know about the other family because the rest of the family. I don't know about her actual father. Johnson was her stepfather. So there's bits of things to tie up, but I'd love to know who her brothers, who her sisters were.
Yes.
But it only sort of got, you know, they didn't have names. Like the father's name was very important, but after that, the wife was lucky to have her name quoted, but the kids.
So they
came out to Australia. I've got them coming from Australia to New Zealand, New Zealand, but I don't know about them getting to Australia. Anyway, we've got off the track a bit.
We have, but that's all good.
It's nice to talk about it. I think, you know, It's nice to know, but I'm interested in her life. Her life was fascinating, but it wasn't that different from a lot of people. They travelled a lot.
They did.
I'm amazed that they took, you know, sailing ships and they I mean, she travelled from New Zealand to San Francisco.
Yes.
And, I mean, had children there. And that was at the time when they had the big earthquakes and the fires. Mm. I mean, it was pretty hard life.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like, David Watson didn't like San Francisco. He was a carpenter, so he came back and but there's bits to patch up.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll be talking to Julia.
Absolutely.
And that could be fun.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
We've got in the studio Dougal and Richard. They're from the Comedy Club, and they're going to talk to us about a comedy show that's on the 18th of April.
Yes, next week. Next Saturday.
It is too.
Absolutely.
Oh, well. So it's good to have you in the studio, Dougal.
It's good to be here.
Simon said I had to get you out of the straw and get you from hibernating. They thought I was very successful at doing that. I didn't do anything. Richard did it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've got as usual, you've got a headliner, and then you've got the rest of the stuff from the Comedy Club. So one of you can tell me what's going to be on from the Comedy Club.
Well, we've got Waiheke Comedy Club doing their show next Saturday at the Artworks Theatre, and we are doing some new improv games. In the first half, there's be six of us doing that. And then we've got, now is it two or three local stand-up acts?
We've got three local stand-up acts.
Yeah, it is three, isn't it? Yeah. So we've got, three of us locals doing a bit of stand-up. And then we've got our headline act, Mr. Jamie Bowen.
Right. Who, as I discovered, has been the nominee for the Green Rumour Award, which is the best bastard to be on with backstage.
And surely that bodes well for us.
It does. Sounds like he'd be a good bloke backstage.
And hopefully he'll be a good bloke front stage.
Well, he's won lots of awards.
He has. He's been around for about 15 years or so in terms of known. I'm sure he's been doing it a bit longer than that. He's been around in more than about a dozen of New Zealand international comedy festivals. So, and he's got his own show on again this year as well. So it'd be great to have him. He's looking forward to being here just before he starts his own show in town for the comedy festival, which is cool. But he's also, people may well recognize him from his TV shows as well. He's been on a number of TV. He sports at the moment one of those very, those all black beards. The ones that come down to the knees. Yeah, he's got one of them. But his saving grace with it, he's got a very impressive of the old sort of handlebar moustache with it.
Oh, really?
That sets the whole thing off. He's quite distinctive in his look. So he usually wears a beanie as well. So,
well, I haven't seen him on anything that I've seen with the beard and the...
People will probably know him quite well from that. So some of the TV stuff he's been on is things like 7 Days. He was on Aotearoa Ha, Wanna Ben, Jono's new show, Big Comedy Jam, Comedy Central. He's just been on stacks. Plus,
he's been on lots of stuff. Yeah. See what the future can hold for you guys?
So as a headliner, we're really fortunate to have him. And he's also co-written, TV3 Sky? I think it was Sky. It was on Sunny Skies was the name of the TV program.
Oh, right.
Which was about 2 years ago. And that had Oliver Driver in it and Tammy Davis as the two leads. And it was great. It was about two brothers who inherited one of the sort of classic Kiwi campgrounds right down by the beach.
Oh, yes, I know the one you mean.
So it just lent itself to having a whole host of comedic characters around the place. So having Jamie on the show on the 18th is just going to be absolutely spectacular. And then, as Richard said, there's three of us locals having a crack at stand-up before.
And who Jamie. Are they?
Well, we've got Emma. Emma Boyer is going to be there. Yes, because Emma's trod the boards, if that's the correct way of putting it, for stand up in the UK. So she knows what she's doing.
She went to drama school in England,
indeed.
And she was she's also done some stand up here as well in the Waiheke Comedy Show last year. So it's nice to have Emma back on stage for that.
And she did the International Women's Festival.
Oh, she did, yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Stand
yeah.
up there with yeah. Linda Savage.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Linda Savage.
So then also doing some stand up, we've got Forrest Denise.
Oh, yes.
Forrest, people again, when this year, will recognise her from doing some of the improv last year. And certainly if she's not on stage, then she's always been helping out backstage on each of the shows, which is great. And then I'll be back again having another crack as well. So that'll be the three of us.
Yahoo. Because it's not simple. People just think you just get up there and, just do it. But it takes a lot of work, a lot of preparation. Being funny is a serious business.
Indeed it is.
So I was told.
Hopefully not on the night.
No, not on the night. But you've got to take it seriously to get it done.
But it's good.
Yeah,
I thought that was a nice little, way of saying lovely things to people, but it fell flat, didn't it, really? Wasn't much of a line.
So try it again. Try again.
I'll try again next time. Okay. Yeah, but it isn't simple. Being funny takes a bit of work.
It does when you're talking about stand-up as opposed to doing the improv, because the improv, really, you're just being yourself with regards to your sense of humour, because you're just reacting to what you're given. So it's there and then, and it's either very funny or whatever. Whereas stand-up, you've got to be funny. You're there to be funny. You're doing it sort of deliberately. So and I've always found it a challenge getting the right material. I mean, because I've always found it a challenge. That makes me sound as though I've been doing stand-up for years. I've done it three times. But it's, just trying to find that material which hopefully the audience can associate with, and you can take them on a little bit of a journey with the story and what have you. But, it can be a bit challenging, can't it? Mm.
Yeah, but the island's great, and Keith Patterson, who started the whole idea behind the Waiheke Comedy Show, which has now been going for about 14 months, I think. We must be coming into our second year now, which is great. He's always wanted to build up the profile of comedy in Waiheke for top comics coming across from town. And he's done that really successfully, and it's still getting a reputation, but it's at the stage now where people like Jamie Bowen is saying, yeah, I'll come over, I don't mind coming. Yes, they're getting paid for it, but it's easy enough also to say, no, coming up so close to the festival, I can't be bothered, I don't want to do it. But the reputation that the show has now got on the city side amongst comics is really high, which is brilliant. Yeah. And that's a huge part of that is down to the audiences that we get, who are phenomenal. And we've built up a bit of a core group of people who will be there to support us, which is fabulous. And you've been to many shows, David, already, which is brilliant.
No, I think it's great. I've seen the row now that we occupy. It's getting,
that's right.
It's going to be over the aisle next, and we've got all these people.
Yeah.
But I remember Jeremy
Elwood.
Elwood. Now, I talked to him afterwards, because he was out there having a smoke as we were walking out, and we said goodnight to him. He was really pleased.
Yeah.
And if you've got guys like that, Jeremy and Jamie, they're all big. They don't have to come. They've got big stuff going on in their lives. But he was mightily impressed.
Yeah, well, of course, Jeremy came back a second time.
Yeah,
so,
so that's great if you can do that. Yeah. So it is a good evening. It's well worth going to, folks. I thoroughly enjoy it. You get to see local people, and you get the headline at the end. And you sort of get – it's not a comparison, but you realise just – the comedy club's really good.
Well, we get on average 60 to 70 people as a core group who will be supporting us. And it's interesting with the comics who come from town, because they often say, look, if we can play a room with 30 people in it, we'll be happy. Mm. And we've got the luxury and had the luxury, I think, on every show we've had of having at least 60 people in the room.
Well,
phenomenal.
I've been to three shows in my time on Waiheke that have all had far, far less than that. And they weren't comedy shows, but they were just a smattering. But I remember one time when we were looking around trying to desperately find seats for people to squeeze them in.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that whole experience that's been built up over the sort of 14 months or so is just fantastic now. And it's another reason why the comics love to come from town, because they're pretty much guaranteed to get an audience size that they wouldn't necessarily get in some of the top venues in town, which is just it's fantastic.
And in some ways, it's an educated audience too. they've seen a lot of people. So they can sort of get into the groove of it, and they can laugh, and it's
yeah,
lovely.
It's interesting.
Must be lovely
to
hear that laughter come back.
It is, and again, and a couple of the comics have realised they've had to change the routine. So even as they've been backstage and listening to the responses to the improv part of it, they've realised they've had to change some of the, how they're going to deliver some of the material, because it's not like a town audience, you're quite right. And it's exactly that word that you used that they've said, it's almost like an educated audience. So they're going, oh, okay, so I can't just come out and swear for, you know, 40 minutes.
No,
there's something here I need to just shift. And that's also something that they've enjoyed, the fact that they do get mature audience. That's what I want for a mature audience. Yeah.
Well, in town, often it's quite a lot of bad language, and that's their business. I don't actually enjoy it a whole lot, and that's what I like about them when they come over here. They tone it down a bit because swearing's not clever, but they're very funny when they don't. And I think they're probably right. They find out that they can do it without swearing.
Yeah,
there was somebody recently who swore a lot. Somebody talked to me in my little ear and said, ooh, ooh, ooh.
Ah. Yes. Well, it's funny because swearing, it's one of those things. Swearing can be done in various different contexts. You can have it just as a very vulgar way of expressing something, yes. Which is normally what people dislike. But you know, I've heard there's various comedy performances out there where you know, a punchline has been beautifully decorated with a swear word of some description, but not in a vulgar way.
Yeah,
but it just fits into the punchline well, and I think that's fine. You know, if it's not used as just you know, as an obscenity.
Yeah. Well, I saw a guy here, and I've forgotten his name. He's got he doesn't have hair. He's follically challenged. He's very well known.
You're looking at me for
no, 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 no. I'm not looking at you. I'm just looking around the room, hoping somebody will know. And I can't remember his name. He lived over here for a little while. He is really rough. He really is. But somehow he has me literally crying. But somebody else can do it, and I go, I didn't like that.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and
exactly.
if I say I don't really like all the obscenities in a comedy stand-up, you'd say, well, how do you like him? Mm. He's terrible, but he makes me laugh.
Yeah,
and certainly, I mean, the people that come to see the Waikiki Comedy Show, they don't mind, they don't mind swearing. It's not that they're prudes or anything, but they're at a level that says, well, you don't need to keep doing this all night. What else is there?
There's a lot of things
and
to do.
As Richard said, when you use certain words just to really finish off, embellish, it can be just hilarious. And I mean, there's words we won't use this morning, obviously, on here.
Well, they've all been used already.
Just using the button. But for me, you get guys like Billy Connolly who use a particular word to just... And as you just said, you know, just tears will roll down your face. Just the way he enunciates it, you just go,
this guy was
classic.
Yeah, this guy, I just can't think of his name, but he's done all the big shows all overseas. He's toured the world. I just can't think of his name, which is a nuisance. But he just has me in absolute fits. There was a person in the front row who challenged him, and that was hilarious.
Yeah.
This person challenged him.
It wasn't Dara O'Brien, was it?
No. It was here. At Artworks, but she challenged him. This is a few years ago now, probably before you came to the island, and that was not nice. The audience cheered him on.
That's right.
And the person came from Rocky Bay, so they were in for big trouble.
And we'll be looking forward to the improv as well, because great improv team that we've got lined up. We're going to have Linda. There's Richard, of course. There's Lance Driver.
This is
Lance's first time on. Yes,
Lance Driver. That sounds like, is that his real name?
Very excited.
Lance. People may know Lance from Vicar of Dibley, where he stood in.
I wanted to be the kissing stunt dummy, and I missed out to him.
Indeed. So he stepped in at incredibly short notice to take the place of someone who couldn't, unfortunately.
I didn't mind him doing the act, but I wanted to be the kissing stunt dummy.
You wanted to kiss Alice.
Yes, that's right. I wanted to kiss her. I thought I'd come on and do that.
Well, if you're coming to the show, you might get a chance to kiss Lance. How would that be?
Excellent. Some nice things, really. Yeah.
So Lance will be there. Lisa Garrity's back on stage, which is brilliant. Linda Savage, of course. No, we'll be there as well. Adam Sears is on as well. And Kim Whitaker. So that's the
Wow, that's a busy lot.
Yeah. So we've got some new people in there, which is great. With Lance, we've got a bit of a new format as well.
Yeah.
Which Keith's can't gonna... say about, but it's going to be really interesting.
But you mean it's not going to be funny?
No, it's going to be very funny.
It's going to be even more funny.
And some new games, as Richard mentioned too. So that's. Again, because, you know, a number of people have been supporting us, it's nice to mix it up a bit and give them something fresh.
Yep. Well, that's great.
And there'll be some old favourites in there.
Oh,
as well.
Good. Because there are some you enjoy to. There Absolutely. Are some you, that you enjoy. The one I always enjoy, and sometimes you do it, is the one where they put the. Stand behind the person and they put the arms around it and they flop stuff in their face and everything. I think that would be marvellous. Yes,
and there'll be a lot more.
But of course, that one's not going to be on this.
No, that's right.
Well, of course.
Well, we could do it here, but it wouldn't be very good radio. In fact, we do it in the last 5 minutes. Richard's been working my arms all day.
That's right.
I've been working Google for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, and you can provide the commentary. So that's next Saturday, Artwork, 7:30.
Yeah, but doors open at 6:30 with the bar opening then. So if people want to come down for a few drinkies beforehand.
And we do need some people along earlier because they're going to be asked to contribute some information for the show as part of the new game. So there's lots more audience participation coming up too. If they get down there, that'll be great.
So that's excellent. Yeah. So how do you get tickets?
You can get tickets from Artworks Theatre.
Yes.
So you can either do that online at artworkstheatre.org.nz.
Yep.
Or give them a call on
3-7-2-2-9-4-1. Yep.
Yep, 2941.
Right.
We'll do that. Tickets are $20 on the door or 18 prepaid. Better off to get them prepaid.
Actually, it's not just the reduction in price. It's whether you get a ticket or not.
Correct.
Because when you get those numbers, and I should imagine you'll do it again because they haven't had it on for a while, to coin a phrase. Haven't we all?
I wasn't going to respond to that.
No, but you did laugh. Yes. I can get a laugh from the audience.
I just sat despondently.
Yes, I know. Yes, I was feeling despondent.
Where's our canned laughter track?
Canned. I probably will be if I keep on going the way I'm going. So, but best to get in early and ring up because then you'll get a ticket because you could miss out.
Well,
I have known them not to be able to fit somebody in.
We have sold out a couple of times.
And we do know that Jamie Bowen, he's got a bit of a
following.
Base.
So they might come from town?
Well, not just town, but we have heard that there's some people coming up from Wellington to see him. On the 18th here at
I thought
Artworks,
that was for you.
Which is fantastic.
Oh, Dunedin, they come to hear you.
That's right. Yeah, they wouldn't understand from Wellington.
No, they're coming from Wellington.
Yeah, they're coming up from Wellington. Yeah. That was the last we heard. There's a group coming up. They said, look, we want to come up, keep us some tickets. We're coming up from Wellington. So the guy's popular. So you're right. Yeah. He's a star, isn't he?
He's big time.
Oh, you're pointing at Richard?
No. I'm pointing at the screen over here because he's over there somewhere. Yes.
Right, yes.
Yeah, he's a
star amongst many flesh. On the
he
evening.
Is. There is quite a lot of them, but he's up there.
He twinkles brightly, possibly, than
Yeah, but
than
he still gets
office.
Up there. And he does a lot of work for the 7 Days comedy show.
Indeed, yes.
Which goes to prove not all comedy is spontaneous. The spontaneous ones are well written. They said that about Winston Churchill. His spontaneous quips were well written. Well, thanks, guys. So there we are. That's I'll remind people on Monday night when I do my In a Mellow Tune show.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.